Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, podcast audience. It's been a while since we got an opportunity to get together on Tuesday night, 7:30, to talk injury conversation, but we're back. Kenny Hodges is here, branch president, Columbus, Ohio. And as always, I've got my partner, Robert Frost, another mail handler out of Columbus, Ohio. We get together to try to bring you interesting facts we talk about interesting topics as it lends itself to injury compensation. How you doing tonight, Rob?
I'm doing pretty well, considering last week.
Okay. That's right. Last week you were a little under weather.
I had a surgery done.
A little deeper under the weather. So everything's going all right now? Are you on a good path to recovery?
Oh, yeah. I'm back at work and everything. It was a minor procedure, but it was life-threatening. So one of those things.
Only because this is an injury conversation podcast, I feel compelled to ask you, was this an on-the-job injury, Mr. Frost?
No, it's not an on the job injury, but it was found as a result of my injury. Okay.
Oh, what
workers' comp calls that is a finding. It's not part of your claim. It's just something that they found while they were examining you. That's not related to the claim.
Oh, okay. So then, even though they didn't pay for it, it's still a real good thing, I guess.
Well, yeah. It turned out it wasn't as bad as they thought it was.
The way you said, yeah, like, didn't I just kind of say it was life-threatening?
Well, it was, because they actually had to go into my heart with a probe.
Okay.
And that's why it was life-threatening.
Oh, well.
They had to go down and look around through the various arteries and stuff. And the heart muscle is a muscle, and it's easily torn. So if the doctor made a hiccup while he was looking, he could have given me a heart attack.
Whoa. Well, I'm glad you had a proficient doctor who did what he needs to do, and thereby you're able to be on this podcast tonight. Hey, but listen, on a sillier topic or a sillier set of circumstances. You know, we talk injury compensation. That's all we talk on this podcast. Again, the intent is to, if you can't remember most of what we put out, if you can just remember that if I get injured at work, there's some things I need to do. And one of those things would be, again, get your CA-10, or again, maybe I can, while the doctor has me incapacitated, maybe I can actually download the Kenny and Rob Injury Compensation Podcast, because there's a series out there that whatever your ailment might be, or whatever CA form you may need, I'm pretty sure we've covered it on a podcast. But the point being, if you are aware, then you know what should happen, and when it doesn't happen, light bulbs will go off to let you know that something was supposed to happen here, but it didn't. So now you will go back and check through your CA-10 to make sure all the steps are being followed. And in most cases, if you're talking about the Columbus, Ohio Post Office, trust me and believe me that more times than not, you're going to find that all the steps were not followed. All we can do is not all we can do. All we're going to do is continue to bring you injury compensation information, continue to try to heighten your sense of awareness or your need to be more informed with respect to federal injury compensation. We run into issues quite frequently in Columbus, Ohio, where, again, supervisors are just not trained or just not concerned enough to handle injury compensation claims in the employee's best interest. Tonight, you know, I don't have any callers on the line, so we, I don't think if someone calls in and has a question, I'll break from the story. But I want to share something with you that took place in Columbus, Ohio, within the past 30 days. An employee of Columbus, Ohio, mail handler, submitted a CA-1 to her supervisor, and the CA-1, the employee actually went to the doctor before submitting her claim. I know most times you submit the claim, then go, but the employee went to the doctor before that, then submitted her CA-1, and the supervisor was just a bit frazzled, again, maybe thinking it should have been a CA-2, but without going into all the details on that, we finally got the supervisor or the postal service to accept her CA-1 with her documentation from her doctor that said she'd be out for X number of days. She submitted this to her supervisor, not to the plant manager. There was this thread of emails, and the MDO, the individual, the plant manager, manager of human resources, all in this email chain got a copy of her CA-1 and her doctor's note. Now, there is an MDO that was handling the case, and everything seemed to be going fine. A conversation was had that she'd get her continuation of pay, again, because it is a CA-1, not a CA-2. Therefore, if it's filed within the first 30 days, she's entitled to continuation of pay. We had the conversation. I'm sorry. It was important that the employee knew if you file a CA-1 and you are paid COP, in the event that your CA-1 is denied, then the post office will recoup that COP that they paid you. You have to understand that. So everybody understands that. I told her. Now, this is where our injury compensation podcast is so helpful, because it lets you know that the managers in this case had no idea of what they were doing. So the MDO from the Tour 3 that was, initially involved in the process, in fact, involved all the way through, I guess, took a couple of days off, and some other MDOs in a key position in Columbus, Ohio, attendance control, they got together and decided that they're going to send this employee a letter, but not from the attendance control signature block, supervisor's signature block, not from the acting MDO's signature block from Tour 2, but they used the signature block for the MDO that was initially involved in the case, but they did it without his knowledge. And just so you know, I guess that's a little of that military coming out of me. When I say signature block, at the bottom of the letter where it has the person's name, their title, and possibly the department they work in, that's what I'm calling a signature block. So on the signature block they used was for an MDO who had no knowledge that this letter was being sent out on his behalf. Another MDO did sign, you know how you do the four and then you send the letter on? Well, let me say this to you before I go any further. I always thought, I'm sorry, if I not sign something, Ken Hodge, my signature block is on it. The only way Robert can issue that letter to somebody for me is if I ask Robert or give Robert permission. I'm pretty sure there's a little bit of a problem here if Robert just decides to put my signature block on a letter. And then even if he signs for Kenny Hodge, Robert Frost, still don't make that right. Does that make sense, Rob?
Ken, can I? Yes. Sure. I was going to say, can I interrupt? Two things have happened here. Both are illegal. The MDO who signed for this other MDO without permission has committed fraud. And they have committed falsification of a government document.
And but you know what makes this, again, because this is an injury compensation podcast, you know what makes this so awful is all we're talking about is documentation because an employee claims an injury at work. I mean, do you understand? And the people who began to misplace or not read the injury compensation data, which in this case was a CA-1 and medical documentation, had nothing to do with the issue. This is what I'm saying, and it makes me – I'm going to veer off just a minute, but I'll be right back to the center road. It makes me wonder, if you will do that for a hurt employee, how many other employees have lost jobs, received unnecessary discipline, received unnecessary what I would call not so much threatening but heartbeat elevating news via a letter signed by this MDO – force another postal manager who had no knowledge. That's not right, and I'm sorry. And let me continue, and you'll probably find four or five more misdemeanors or felonies here. So the employee gets the letter. Now, again, they know that they've already submitted a CA-1 and documentation from her doctor keeping her off work. Now, what I say is, you might have an issue as to how you're going to pay her. You can go back and forth. Well, I'm going to pay her COP. No, I'm not. I mean, you should pay her COP, but that might be an issue. You might have an issue of, did she use sick leave or annual leave? But the fact of the matter is, you now saying you have no documentation to support her absence. See, that's just, I don't even know how to begin to digest that. But see, here's the good thing. All that information that they claim they don't have, well, their plant manager has it. The manager of human resources has it. The TOR 3 MDO, who should have it, has it. So to me, looks like a clear case of that's another podcast. But let's keep going. So the employee gets upset and calls the MDO. How could you do that? We you know you got documentation. The MDO says, what are you talking about? So the employee continues, so the employee reads the letter to the MDO, and here it is. The MDO says, whose signature block, not signature, is on the letter, says, I don't know anything about that. Now, come on. I mean, come on. Are you serious? How are you going to go and just send a letter on behalf of somebody else without even talking to him about it? That is absolutely crazy. I'm sorry. And there should be, I don't know what, but not only should something be done about that, now we have to go back and look at how many more times has somebody fallen into that trap, because that's wrong. So now that the MDO says he don't know anything about the letter, so now we come back and it appears that the attendance control supervisor, now again, I'm going to say this again, it appears that the attendance control supervisor got in the middle of this, and the attendance control supervisor, because she didn't have documentation, nor should she have it, or I don't know how management disperses their documentation, but the MDO had it. So the fact that the attendance control supervisor claims, first of all, I'm sorry, attendance control supervisor, that's a core function of management. That's part of the employee-employer relationship building process when your direct supervisor takes care of all that for you. But getting back, so the attendance control supervisor not having information writes this letter, puts the missing TOR 3 MDO's manager signature block on the letter, gives it to a TOR 2 acting MDO and has her sign it, and then they mail it to this employee's house. And again, it just had her hysterical. I'm just saying, so now if you think you had a CA-1 already, you just exacerbated that issue. I'm sorry. Words don't express how rotten that is. I'm sorry. And again, all because an employee is out on an injury compensation claim. Now, I got to add one last twist to it, and that is because the attendance control supervisor, from my understanding there, somebody went in and took out the young lady's COP and gave her LWOP. Now, see, this is one of the brilliant, this is what you call a traceable footprint that somebody left in the computer system. It's not going to be real hard to figure out who took COP out and replaced with LWOP. Now, the issue is, what are you going to do to that person? Because somebody has to be held accountable. But that was my, and I'm sorry, that was my injury compensation story, just to show you that, it, now again, Carol, I'm sorry, did I just say her name out loud? But the employee, while caroling through the streets because it was Christmas time and they were getting ready to go singing, but the employee had knowledge of the injury compensation process and contacted someone else to confirm, and this is how she stayed on top of this. But I say to other folks, man, you have to understand, anytime you get injured at work or feel there's a need to file a claim form, and again, I'm talking legitimate needs. I don't talk the Mickey Mouse or let's run a scam. I don't do that. But when there's a legitimate need, then you have to take a little time and read and make sure you look out for your best interest, because nobody is going to stay on top of that like you. If it's you that's hurt, if you're the one that's hurt and you're the one that needs medical attention. Would you add anything to that story, Rob?
No, not really, but something that we should mention when we talk about the CA1 especially,
mm-hmm.
is something that you brought up to me earlier, in that stress is a legitimate claim for CA1. We can't go into the details of what caused the stress, because that's private information. But the reason the person is out off work is because the situation was so severe that her doctor literally took her off for work for a period of time. So stress is a legitimate claim.
Now, a lot of people, and again, just to add to that a little bit, a lot of people, when they hear stress, automatically they think CA2, CA2A, not CA1, because most people think that if you're stressed, then you had to have been stressed over a period of time. But I want to say, if you are in a situation, and again, you may go to work, everything is fine, wonderful. You know, here comes postal management. With a little bit of that unprofessionalism, a little more of that unprofessionalism, a little more of that unprofessionalism, about an hour or two into the tour, okay, now you've got a headache. You just had a CA1 traumatic injury due to stress. So, again, more times than not, stress is over a period of time. But I stress to the listeners, one of the main ingredients, or one of the main caveats that defined a CA1, is you know when it happened, not a roundabout or not within a specific period of dates. You know the exact date and pretty much the time it happened, thereby qualifying that injury or that claim to be traumatic in nature. And please remember that. Because as soon as you hear stress, and even in this case, as soon as the documentation from the doctor identifies stress or stressors as the cause that he was the reason he was taking the employee out of work, right away the supervisor, it's a CA2. Well, no, it's not a CA2. And I got involved with that. No, this is a CA1 based on, you know, the exact date and time. And I do thank postal management, the HR manager, because they got involved and it was fixed relatively simply. Simple. But as soon as the HR manager put things in motion and I guess went to do other functions, here comes Columbus management and went and undid what was done by Cincinnati. So, again, I hope somebody asks questions and try to find out, well, why would you undo what was already done? Why would you now? So, again, so follow along on the injury compensation trail. First, I file a CA1 because I think, or I'm pretty certain that you, this incident, excuse me, I'm pretty certain the situation that happened right now at work is what stressed me out. Okay, so now I'm on a CA1. Now I have to fight with you to get you to accept my claim. Let's just say we add just a little more stress on top of that. After we get my claim and we fight it and get it right, now I got to fight with you now to get my continuation of pay, which you already approved, but a lower manager disapproved and took it out. So let's add just a little more stress on top of that initial condition. So now at this point, that employee is now in a position to readjust or make a adjustment to her claim and add two or three more episodes to it. So from a simple stress situation, because we want to harass the employee about the right form, then we want to not pay the employee COP when it is authorized and they are approved. So all you're doing, postal management, is just taking a stressful situation and exacerbating that to a much greater situation when it really does not have to be. But, you know, working in Columbus, Ohio, I wish I could say that that was an anomaly. I really do. But that happens more time probably than it don't happen. I know that sounds pretty hard, but I believe it to be true. It's not just me making a statement trying to hurt anybody. No, I find that quite often.
Yeah, and I will concur with that. I think we've had, what, 5 cases now in the last year where the supervisor has denied the CA1 or CA2 claim, and we helped the worker put them through, and they got their claim numbers and everything. So, yeah, it's, as far as I'm concerned, it's a management problem.
It is, and they're not addressing that because all they want to address is maintaining a level of productivity that makes no sense to begin with. So when you get injured at work, they don't get a lot of training in that, because all their, I don't know what they get trained on, because they sure don't get trained on running efficient operation. I don't know what they get trained on, but it's not, they don't get trained they don't get trained on trying to take care of injured people. And I think that the post office should, because I don't know, man, if you get injured at work, again, and you know, most injuries at work that people actually file, for every person who files a CA form, I'm willing to bet you at least 10 suffers or receive injuries that they never file. So for every one form that's filed, there's about 10, 11 that should have been filed. So you would think that when someone does file one, that you'd make sure that they get, excuse me, the proper treatment and get that expedited. But, you know, you can go out of work on an injury and they've got this, and I'm drifting over a little bit, they've got this, the DRAC team, Yeah, I'm coming out of the CA form just for a minute. What I'm trying to show right now is even when you get injured at work, there are systems in place that are there to help you. But because those systems are run are ran by postal management, seems like it's always a problem. Like the DRAC team is designed, their function is to make sure injured, I don't know if it's just on the job or off the job, injured employees who still want to work go in front of this committee and they should find something for you to do. But they meet, I guess, whenever they want to meet. It's possible you could be injured off work for over 2 months waiting for a telephone conversation with them. So I never had one. Yeah, and again, their whole reason of existence, the makeup of the committee is to hear and read, review medical documentation from employees requesting limited or light duty work assignments. And if I'm requesting it in January and you can't even meet with me until March, well, really, did you help me out at all? And because we do this injury conversation podcast and we have to, and I have to work with DRAC on one or two occasions, if the injury is not going to be more than X number of days, DRAC does not even have to get involved. So a lot of injuries that people are asking to for light duty for 30 days, what management does is they try to schedule you an appointment with DRAC because they know it's going to be more than 30 days, and that's their sinister reason. Well, that didn't come out right, but that's their reason for not allowing you to work. It's crazy, all because you got hurt, whether it be at work or off work. And I'm here to tell postal employees that the federal law is in place, FECA law is in place, because if you get hurt at work, then the employer has an obligation to make sure you get rehabilitated and your life financially isn't turned upside down while you recuperate and rehabilitate from an injury sustained at work. Nothing. It should be the company's honor to make sure you receive medical benefits as you should. Because what happens is, if they would do their job, I do believe this, if they would do their job while I'm out of work and I'm receiving my pay, medical documentation that's needed, I'm receiving updates from the post office, or I'm providing updates to the post office. When I return to work, what kind of an employee do you think I'm going to be? I'm going to go on a limb. Yeah, much better. Because when it was your turn to do what it is you're supposed to do, you did it in an exemplary manner. So now that you made sure my claim forms were proper, you made sure, again, I received my COP and then my injury compensation. When I come back to work, you just showed me that I have value to you as part of this company. And when you show me that, again, it will be exhibited in my work performance. That's only natural. Now, again, it's not 100%, folks. So the post office does that one time and the person that they do it to don't pay it forward. Then they're ready to throw their hands in the air and says it doesn't work. But I'm here to tell you, postal management, if you would take care of injured employees as per your job requirements, you could help save or retain better employees. That's all I have to say on that tonight, Rob. So I'm going to let you take us home tonight.
Thank you, Ed, everybody who joined us, if anybody did. This is Robert and Kenny. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, have a nice evening, everyone. Talk to you next week.